Welcome to Ringside with Arif Dean, presented by Mile High Sports. This is, of course, Arif, your Avalanche beat writer over at ColoradoHockeyNow.com. Podcaster here at Mile High Sports, coming to you on an off day Tuesday to talk about the latest news around the NHL. This is something that I wanted to write about, but I'm probably going to save for after the homestand, maybe even the Four Nations break, where I can kind of break it down a little bit more. So look out for ColoradoHockeyNow.com for more on that. However, I did want to kind of get into it a little bit here. And I am obviously have not even mentioned what I'm referring to, but it is about the latest news that the NHL has canceled escrow payments for the rest of the season, and players are going to get back what they spent, and the business is looking good in the NHL. Things are on the up. So let's get into it a little bit. Let's talk a little bit about what this all means, how it affects the salary cap, and most importantly, how it's going to affect the Avalanche. And like I said, my thoughts today are going to kind of be jumbled and all over the place. I do want to dive deeper into this when I have more time to dig into it. And obviously, it's not the most pressing need because it is referring to things that are going to affect the salary cap in the future. But I do want to share my thoughts initially. So number one, just to kind of give you a background of what's happening right now, the NHL and the NHLPA, Players Association that is, came to an agreement during COVID to extend the current collective bargaining agreement. It was a return to play agreement that they had made back then, if you remember. And part of it was a cap on escrow. The NHL players did not want to get their salaries rolled back. To make up and account for the fact that the 50-50 that they were going to get was no longer going to be 50-50 because of the COVID pause. So let me actually take it a step further and let's say this. The salary cap is set up obviously based off of hockey-related revenues. And for those that don't know what that means, it's any money that the NHL makes, it's hockey-related revenues. And that could be teams and that could be the league as a whole. Anything that's classified as HRR. That HRR is entered into a formula where it's basically split 50-50 in a sense, where the owners get 50%, the players get 50%. The 50% towards the players is divided into the teams, and that's what makes the salary cap. Now, the salary cap is based off of last season or the year before that. How much money they made back then is how much money, because it can be a little bit of a prolonged process to count hockey-related revenues, it determines the salary cap for today. So in 2020, when the NHL had to stop play, like the rest of the world had to stop, because of COVID, they were projecting that the league was obviously not going to run into this once-in-a-lifetime pandemic. And the projections that they were making and the number that they had for 50-50 split of revenue was based off of what they had made the previous years, expecting that to remain the same or to go up. And obviously, that did not happen. As soon as we closed the doors, as soon as we missed, each team missed whatever it was, 12 or 13 regular season games, playoff gate revenue, because there were no fans in these arenas, even though it was played out and the playoffs ended up being a little bit longer than usual in terms of games played because of the play-in and the round robin and all that stuff that they added, there were no fans at these games. So there was a lot of hockey-related revenue lost. The NHL is a gate-driven league. That means that most of the revenue they make are based off of ticket sales and the in-arena stuff, merchandise and all that crap. All of that was put on hold. So going into that 2020 summer, when they came with this return to play extension to the collective bargaining agreement, it was under the sense that in order for owners to be made whole, because the salaries that players made in that 2020 season was now more than 50% of revenue, because all the money lost was taken out of the owners' pockets. It was the profit of the sales of all of the things like ticket sales and all the things we just went over. Players didn't want to take a salary rollback. They didn't want to have to pay back or to have their salaries cut. Players also didn't want escrow to be hit all in one season at an insane number. So they put a cap on escrow. They extended over 4 or 5 years or however long it's been now, with the idea in mind that the salary cap would remain flat other than a potential $1 million or 5% raise depending on where they are with escrow payments. Now, what is escrow? For those of you that have a house and a mortgage, you kind of understand what it is. But ultimately, what happens is players pay a percentage of their salary into this escrow bank that is withheld third-party bank or holder that holds the funds. And then once you figure out where the hockey-related revenues are, you take that percent that the players paid and you either give it to the owners or to the players, or you split it and distribute it in a certain way to make sure that the 50-50 is honored. So for those that have a mortgage, you understand kind of something similar to this, because you pay an escrow into your taxes or your insurance and things like that. And then if you have ended up paying too much, the money comes back to you. But if you didn't pay enough, you get a bill that says we still need this much for it to be made whole. So it's ultimately very similar to that. So players have been paying 5 or 6% or whatever it's been. I don't know the exact numbers over the last 5 years, but this season it was 6%, with the idea in mind that this is the last year, if even needed at all, to make the owners whole for all the losses in 2020. The players would owe the owners back the money that they lost in 2020 to make it a 50-50 split. Now, going into the season, there was a thought that the players had already paid it all back because revenues continued to soar and skyrocket. But because it is a prolonged process of how long it takes to count hockey-related revenues, things did not change. The salary went up 5% this year to $88 million. And at the same time, they continued to pay escrow. Now, here we are. We're halfway through the season. Players are, they get paid monthly, so they're coming up to a late January payment. And because it has now been determined that the players have paid off the money that they needed to make it whole, they are now being told for the rest of the season, you are not paying any more escrow. This 50-50 split is happening on top of that. So they've already gotten half their paychecks. There's a 6% escrow on the entire season. That means for every player's salary, they have already paid 3% of that toward escrow. On top of no longer needing to pay escrow for the rest of the season, the escrow that they did pay this year is going to be returned to them. And on top of that, the salary cap limited to $88 million wasn't high enough, because players are going to get an extra 2 or 3 or 4%, which is escrow that they paid last season. I believe it's going to be 4%, also back into their bank accounts. When does this distribution happen? I don't know. But moral of the story, the NHL is thriving. The salary cap is too low. The return of play agreement that they came to an agreement on in 2020 has now ended in terms of paying off all the escrow and making everything whole. And now that that's all done, the salary cap is going to go back to being tied to hockey-related revenue. There is one more year remaining on this collective bargaining agreement that says that the cap can only go up by $5 million. So if things were to remain this way, next season the cap would be, I believe, 92.4. And I'm going to double check that really quick in my calculator, because it's a 5% raise. Yes. If things were to remain the same, the salary cap next year would be $92.4 million, knowing very well that that's not 50-50. That's below 50-50. And the owners are taking more of that, which means that they would be the ones making the players whole. However, the season after that, when hockey-related revenues goes back to being the determining factor of the salary cap, now that we've gone through this weird five-year stretch after COVID of particular things being agreed to, you could see the salary cap rise. If it were to be $92.4 million next season, you could see it jump the following year to like $105, $106, $110. Like, it could be a crazy high number. So now what the NHL wants to do is they're discussing a smoother rise of the cap. And the reason why they're doing that is they don't want one offseason to see a jump where suddenly those UFAs are the ones benefiting the most. And at the same time, teams don't have a chance to kind of account for the fact that with a rising salary cap means a rising salary cap floor. And suddenly for some teams, you got to spend 20 or 30 million that you weren't spending the previous year. And you got to figure out a way to spend it, which means more overpaid players, more bad contracts, and just a whole heap of a mess of things like that. If you recall in the NBA, the season that the Golden State Warriors got Kevin Durant, that was because it was a one-year rise where I don't know the exact numbers, but it was like a 30 or 40 million raise in 1 year because something had changed in basketball revenue, and it was probably the TV deal at the time. And every team suddenly got an additional 30 or 40 or whatever the hell million dollars in salary cap. So the Golden State Warriors, who were already a dynasty and winning championships, went out and signed Kevin Durant. Nobody could stop them. So the NHL wants to avoid that. So now what they're discussing is more of a like a continued rise to smooth it out, more of like a nice transition where every summer benefits a little bit. So the salary cap is $88 million this year. One of the things they're discussing is raising it to $97 million next year. In fact, Alan Walsh, one of the NHL's agents for players like Max Pacioretty, Marc-Andre Fleury, and someone you guys might recognize a little bit more, Jonathan Drouin, Alan Walsh says that he believes that the cap will be $97 million. He said it on his podcast, Agent Provocateur, on this Steve Dangle Podcast Network. And then the very next couple days, the NHL announces the escrow thing. And now Alan Walsh is kind of backtracking, like, I don't know if it'll only be 97. So it might even be more than that. Now, the whole purpose of explaining all of that is to say 92.4 is probably not going to happen. 97 is probably going to happen. What that means is a player like Mikko Rantanen is going to want to get paid a hell of a lot more, because with a rising cap means rising salaries. And we are finally going to see the first, we've already kind of seen it a little bit because McDavid made 12.5 and he signed that contract a long time ago. McKinnon in 2022 signed a contract for 12.6. Matthews in 2023 signed a contract for 13 and a little. Draisaitl in 2024 signed a contract for 14. You're finally starting to see that number raise. It's kind of like quarterbacks in the NFL. There was a time where Kirk Cousins was, for some reason, the highest paid quarterback. Russell Wilson was the highest paid quarterback. Aaron Rodgers. The number continued to rise. So you're going to start to see something like that in the NHL. And it's going to happen at all levels, you know? It's going to be the type of thing where, you know, we are officially at the point now, post-COVID, where we need to start to adjust our expectations for a player's salary. Today, a Logan O'Connor makes $2.5 million, maybe $3 million. O'Connor kind of took a little bit of a pay cut, it seems. In 5 years from now, a Logan O'Connor type of player might make what Lekkonen makes now, or Val, $4.5 million to $6 million. Like, there is an opportunity here for the cap to continue to go up, where you're going to start to see players making 15, 16, 17, maybe even $20 million one day. It's going to slowly work its way up there. Now, the salary cap last year was 82.5. Nathan MacKinnon, he obviously signed the contract in 2022, but it was for the 23-24 season. Nathan MacKinnon's first year under contract, he ate up 15.27% of the Avalanche's total salary cap. In order for Mikko Rantanen, with a $97 million salary cap, to reach that threshold of taking up 15.27% of the cap, Mikko Rantanen would have to sign a contract where he's making $14.8 million. So what was $12.6 million out of the salary cap last season is going to be $14.8 million out of the salary cap next season. And the reason why I use last season is because that was the first year of Nathan MacKinnon's 8-year contract. When he signed it in 2022, it was under the, obviously, it was a year in advance where MacKinnon still played out the 22-23 season, the year where he had 111 points. He played that out under his previous contract where he was making 6.3 million. Which is kind of crazy, by the way. McKinnon gets paid 12.6 in his first year making that number. He puts up 140 points. Like, even if you wanted to argue that he was overpaid, you can't in that particular season. Like, just unreal numbers. But anyway, back on topic. Mikko Rantanen would have to make $14.8 million to hit that. So the Avalanche trying to keep him less than McKinnon, even if he was to get paid $12.59 million, like to be right below the 12.6, or even if he was to make precisely 12.6. You know, we've seen this in the past. We saw Malkin and Crosby make 8.7 at the same time once upon a time. We saw Patrick Kane and Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews sign the same contract once upon a time. But if Mikko Rantanen signed for 12.6, it would be 12.9% of the cap. 12.9% of the cap this year is the equivalent of somebody making 11.3, which is a little bit less than what David Pastrnak makes. So you could understand why Rantanen wants to get paid more. Now with this news that the cap is going to rise even more, now that with this news that the escrow payments are paid off and the things are going well, you know that agents for guys like Mikko Rantanen, Mitch Marner, even lesser names like that, below them, John Tavares, Brad Marchand, these are veterans, Claude Giroux, everybody's waiting to see where the salary cap lands. Elliot Friedman said today on his podcast, he's kind of expecting that, you know, before the March 7 trade deadline, teams are going to know what the salary cap is. There is even a possibility that the next 2 or 3 years of salary cap is announced so that agents and players know when they sign contracts what they are worth. When Alex Pietrangelo was a UFA and signed for, I think it was $8.8 million with the Vegas Golden Knights, he did that under a salary cap that at the time was $80.5 million. He did that at a time where it was a flat cap for the next 3-4 years. That's no longer the case. Players are going to be making a lot more money. So I say that to say, if or when Mikko Rantanen signs, and it's still kind of all up in the air what's happening there, there's a little bit of a stalemate. There was a reporter for TVA Sports that said that he thinks they're going to trade Rantanen, and I don't buy it. But then again, Elliot Friedman, who doesn't like to stir pots in any kind of way, said to, we'll see on Mikko Rantanen in terms of how it plays out. But the biggest thing here with the Avalanche and with Mikko Rantanen is if or when he signs a contract extension with the Avalanche, and I still believe he will, the number is going to scare a lot of people. But you got to understand that this is where the league is going. And for a player who has had 104 and 105 points over the last 2 seasons, respectively, flipped around 105, then 104, and is on pace for like 110, he's going to make a lot of money. How high is it going to get? Is he going to reach the $14 million that Leon Draisaitl makes? I don't know. But I do want to kind of lay out a little bit of a salary cap picture just so that you have an understanding. If Mikko Rantanen was to sign for $13 million, it's more than Nathan McKinnon, which is where the Avalanche are drawing the line. It's less than the Leon Draisaitl, which is where his agent is drawing the line. If Mikko signed for $13 and Gabe Landeskog played hockey again, you would have a team next year without any moves, which we know is impossible because they're going to make moves. You would have a team next year with $2.25 million in remaining cap space. Here's what that roster would look like. Lehkonen, McKinnon, Rantanen, Nichushkin, Mittelstadt, Landeskog. Again, I'm only using the scenario of Landeskog playing because I want to show you worst case. And by worst case, I mean you're still accounting for Landeskog's $7 million while trying to fit in Rantanen. You're not picking one or the other. It's not Landeskog tries a return, doesn't work, he retires, and then you can give Rantanen a bunch of money because Landeskog's not coming back. So under the scenario where you keep Mikko Rantanen and pay him more than McKinnon, and under the scenario where even then Landeskog comes back healthy, you could have a roster next year and with no changes, which obviously is not going to happen. And by no changes, I mean nobody who's under contract gets traded. Kiviranta walks, Drouin walks. I mean, there's a reality where both those guys re-sign. But you get the point. I'm just trying to create an example of a contract, of a roster. Lekkonen, McKinnon, Rantanen. Nichushkin, Mittelstadt, Landeskog. Wood, Colton, Richie, or Wood, Richie, Colton, whichever way you want to go. Ivan, Parker Kelly, Logan O'Connor. On defense, Devontaeves, Kale McCarr, Samuel Girard, Josh Manson. Third pair, I have it currently at Sean Behrens and Keaton Middleton, who make a combined $1.7 million. But it doesn't have to be those guys. That $1.7 million can easily be the next Sam Malinsky and Calvin DeHaan, because that's pretty much what they make. So it doesn't need to be Middleton and Behrens specifically, but if the Avalanche were to once again go cheap on that third pair like they did this year, where like they entered the season with like Shillington making 1.1 and Malinsky and Brännström and DeHaan all making less than $1 million, and they told them fight it out for two guys, less than $2 million basically for those last two. So I use Middleton and Behrens as placeholders. And then Blackwood at 5.25, Wedgwood at 1.5. This team would still have $2.25 million in cap space. The following year, when the cap goes up from 97 to, I don't know, 102, 103, 104, and then you got to sign Cale Makar, and Cale Makar's making 15, well, he's just eating up the remainder of that cap rise. Then obviously there's a decision to be made on Lekkonen the year after that. Lekkonen right now is like precisely halfway through his contract. It's a five-year contract. We are 48 games into the third year of it. Pretty much, we just passed the halfway mark of Lekkonen's contract. So maybe looking that far ahead is a little too far. But this is all to say that the cap is going to go up so much. And if it's only 97, like the way that Alan Walsh spoke on his podcast after the announcement that the escrow payments were paid off, it kind of made it sound like there's a chance they could go higher. I don't know if that's going to be the case. Obviously, if the Avalanche go to 92, if the NHL decides to go to 92.4, there's a little bit of an issue. But if they were to go to 97, the roster that I just read out is cap compliant. Of course, that's also only 20 skaters, but there's 2.25 million. You can have a couple of extras there, and you're still less than 97 million. And the reason why I mentioned this includes no changes is because there's quite a few question marks on this team that I wonder about. Ross Colton makes $4 million. I wonder about that. Miles Wood makes $2.5 million. I sure as hell wonder about that. And Josh Manson makes $4.5 million. I don't think they're going to trade Girard, because Girard at $5 million for two more years is way too valuable. Like, you're not going to get a $5 million player to play the minutes Girard plays. Maybe you feel like he's not working here, whatever you want to say. Maybe you feel like the Avalanche need to get him a better partner if Josh Manson's not working. Those are beyond the point. Josh Manson obviously has one more year left on his deal next year. Sam Girard has next year and the year after. So he's got 2.5 seasons, because we still have half a season left now. But this salary cap picture, like if you were to get rid of Colton, and again, this is under the assumption that Landeskog plays. If Landeskog doesn't play, the Avalanche are going to do a lot of things. I don't know what they are, but they are going to make some big moves. But if Landeskog was to return and play, and hopefully he remains and is effective. And again, I have him on the second line now. That doesn't necessarily mean that's where he has to play. I'm just kind of laying it out. Maybe they sign Jonathan Drouin and Landeskog's on the third line. Who knows? This is all to say that it's possible for the Avalanche to pay Mikko Rantanen $13 million and keep Gabe Landeskog and keep Colton and Wood and Manson and Girard, and account for the new Mackenzie Blackwood contract extension and the fact that your backup is going to be making $1.5 million in Wedgwood instead of what you were hoping in Eustace Annunen making like $837K. Account for all those things. You can ice a roster under the salary cap. You obviously want to do some things. What if Callum Ritchie's not ready? Well, you can also trade Ross Colton or Miles Wood or both or Josh Manson. Obviously not all three of them, but there are so many things you can do. You can re-sign Jonathan Drouin. Giant question mark. Gabe Landeskog. Val Nichushkin. Nobody wants to say it out loud, but he's kind of one strike away from getting his contract terminated and being banned or something. There's so many things that can happen over the next 5 months. Well, a little longer than that. 6 months between now and July to see what's going to end up being the roster that the Avalanche take into next season. Because usually by mid to late July, you kind of have an idea of what your roster looks like. July 1st, shitload of things happen, some trades here and there. But it is a fascinating thing to look at. It is a fascinating thing to kind of try to read through because this is good news for the Avalanche at the right time. Perhaps had COVID never happened, the Avalanche could still have a little bit of a dynasty. They could have kept guys like Nazem Kadri. They could have kept guys like Burakovsky even maybe. They could have kept Kemper instead of doing the whole Georgiev thing that they did. And yes, Kemper had two bad years in Washington when Washington wasn't playing well, but look at him now in LA and the fact that he had an understanding of how to play in the Avalanche system. And, you know, it could have been a different scenario. But the Avalanche had to ship out a bunch of guys because it was a flat cap. That's no longer the case. So it is really interesting to see what's going to happen. But it is also coming at a good time where with Mikko Rantanen and eventually Cale Makar probably signing two of the top five or four or three or 10 contracts in the NHL, on top of the fact that Nathan MacKinnon also makes 12.6 and was once number one, now number three, this comes at a good time. I also never mentioned Casey Mittelstadt's name because it would be outrageous to, but at the same time, you wonder about him if the season continues the way it has. He makes 5.75. So I'm really interested to see where this goes. I thought it was huge news. I'm going to start to ask players a little bit about it to see who keeps up and what they keep up with in terms of the escrow payments and all that. But this is great news all around. The NHL is about to go on a massive growth in terms of salaries and player salaries and things like that. And, you know, the salary cap's going to go back to being what it used to be pre-COVID, where like right now, pretty much every team operates at or around the salary cap ceiling. That's not supposed to be the case. Like if the salary cap is in a few years from now, like 110 million in 2027 or 2028 or whatever, you're not supposed to have 25 teams spending 110. This is supposed to be where the higher spending teams separate themselves from the budget teams who might spend 95, 98, 190, but still numbers bigger than they're spending right now because revenue continues to grow. So that's it for today's episode. No day-to-day hockey talk. I just kind of wanted to get in on this because this is something I'm going to be following throughout the summer. I love talking salary cap. I love talking numbers. For those who have listened to the show for the 330, 40, whatever episodes that I've done this show by myself and with JJ Jerez, you know how much I love that kind of stuff. So it's exciting to keep an eye on, and we're going to see it affect the Mikko Rantanen contract one way or another. It just matters on where he signs it, how much he signs it for, and obviously when he signs it. So let's put an end to the show here. Follow me on Twitter at RunRightEriff. Read all my work at ColoradoHockeyNow.com. Subscribe to get CHN Plus content. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple, on YouTube, on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. If you made it this far in the podcast, bless your pretty little heart. Let's make hockey for everyone, and we out you.